and welcome to House of Comments. So you've gripped by election fever. Here we go. We've got to the first sort of half of the week. We've done nearly 3 days of the election campaign, two and a half by the time we're recording.
I think the BBC formulation is we're in the second full day of the campaign.
Yes, that works. I'm Charlotte Henry. She's Emma Bunnell. How are you holding up so far?
Great. Yeah. Fabulous.
You're doing well? Good, good, good. Everyone keeping... I'm slightly worried that the lobby lot have gone too early and are already losing their minds. But we're here. We're going to be okay.
Oh, God, can you imagine? They're going to be a nightmare by the
end
of this.
I have actually done an election campaign as a political journalist chasing around the party leaders and events, and it is exhausting. So they do have my sympathy. So I can see why they're about to lose their minds, but they clearly are on. That is clearly what will happen. May the force be with them. So there's a few things that have happened, not surprisingly, since we talked. I guess the big thing we should talk about to start, because it's broken just before we hit record, which this is the only time I'm ever going to say this expression, but thank you, Jeremy Corbyn, because normally what happens is these type of things happen once we finish recording. He at least had the dignity to make his announcement well before we were recording, which was Jeremy Corbyn is going to try and keep his seat in Islington North. He will do that as an independent. He has subsequently been expelled from the Labour Party. Not surprising, because he's running against a Labour candidate. He will be.
Yeah, that's kind of clause one.
it's pretty basic stuff there. You can't run against the party candidate. So that's where we are. It's a pretty extraordinary turn of events from party leader to independent candidate. We don't really need to rehash how we got here. What I really want to focus on, I know you're writing about this today, Emma, is quite what the nature of this campaign will be. It's going to be really horrible, isn't it?
In that seat, yes. I don't think there's any getting around it. Corbyn has always inspired very extreme passions, both for and against. And the people with those passions, both for and against, loathe each other.
Sure. And you're just talking about in the Labour Party here.
Well, in the Labour Party and beyond, and have no compunction about saying so loudly, largely on social media. But I strongly suspect that in the heat of a campaign, that will spill out into real life on the streets. Whichever of the two shortlisted candidates, one of whom is a London Assembly member, Sam Mowena. Let me just get the name of the other one, who's an Islington councillor, and his name is Prafal Nagand. They're both, I would say, seen as moderates. I did a quick Google search, and both of them have written at some point for Progressive Britain, which is the successor to Progress. Mm-hmm.
The quote-unquote right of the Labour Party.
Yeah. I don't think it's quote-unquote. I think it is the right of the Labour Party. I think they would say that as proudly as anyone else. But there is a... So it will be seen as that factional battle. There will be a lot of people making difficult choices over the coming days, because, and I think people who aren't party members don't really understand the emotionality that is connected to that membership. When you're a party member, and I'm not just a party member who has a card in their wallet and forgets about it for 5 years.
No, if you're an active
party
campaigner
member who actively goes to meetings, a great deal of your social and just general time infrastructure is dedicated to that.
Well, I know someone who wrote a wonderful play about this.
Well, indeed. but that was slightly different, because all of those people, and there was a scene in the play that was quite symbolic, where they all sang different factional songs and end up singing the red flag together. They didn't leave the Labour Party. If you leave the Labour Party, your life changes significantly from having been an activist.
I can chip into this. It's not quite where I thought the conversation was going to go, but I'll chip in anyway, because I did leave a political party. And the point you make about your social life and your time is entirely accurate, and it's very difficult, and it's part of what makes the decision very difficult. And so this head, so you're talking about an Islington councillor who very obviously will have had a relationship with Jeremy Corbyn, like him or loathe him, because you'll have had to do business with him at some point. And so it will be difficult. I think it will be nasty. And I have no doubt there'll be media scrutiny of it. And I guess we will have to keep an eye on it. The other,
and the other consideration, of course, is a lot of those people, they will be wanting to fight for the Labour Party to be more left-wing. That's harder to do from outside. Mm-hmm. You will have more sway in that if you hold a constituency office, for example. Some of them will want to be councillors. Now, if you want to be a councillor in Islington, there's really, apart from about four or five, a handful of Greens, only one game in town, and that's the Labour Party. So there are a lot of considerations that people will be making. Some of them will go one way, some of them will go the other way, and there will probably be huge, huge fallings out as a result. So I think I think it's worth remembering the human element of this as well as the political element.
I always think that. I'm very clear on my thoughts of Jeremy Corbyn, but I'm more interested as what you're really talking about is the people who do the door-to-door campaigning, give out the leaflets, make the cups of tea in the campaign HQ. That's really what you're talking about. And you're right, absolutely, to reflect on the human element of that. I also actually, and it leads me nicely to the next topic, want to talk about the human element of the MPs, because there's quite obviously fury amongst MPs, I think of all parties, but particularly the Conservative Party, given...
Well, I don't think there's any fury in Labour MPs. They're delighted.
Well, just let me finish, because I think what we forget on this human element of MPs is that they need to plan their lives a bit. And yes, the Labour MPs may be very pleased that their party looks like it's set for power, but this has all happened much quicker, much earlier than everyone thought. I saw, Tracy Crouch, the Conservative MP, talking that she posted on Twitter that she's a bit upset because stuff she's working on won't now get time to finish. Lots of Conservative MPs thought they had slightly longer time to plan the next phases of their life. We've seen lots of people standing down, including today John Redwood, who has announced, the MP for Wokingham, who is going to stand down. He's amongst them. He's particularly obviously quite high profile on the right of the Conservative Party. He's the Brexiteer wing of the Conservative Party. He's actually a fascinating character. I don't think I share much of his politics, but if any. But he's a fascinating character because he was quite a sort of pioneer in political blogging. And he did indeed announce his resignation on his blog. So he won't be standing again, which is kind of interesting. I think I'm really pleased you mentioned the human element, because that's in the heat of an election, that often gets lost in, as you say, in the heat of battle and in an election. And these are actually real people who are looking for a job, looking to campaign, looking to serve their communities, whichever way you want to put it. And we should remember that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I remember 97 really, really well. And I remember Liz Lynn losing her seat in Rochdale and being really upset, crying and crying and crying.
Of course.
And even at that moment of great triumph for Labour, I had a little bit of a twinge of sympathy for her.
Absolutely.
I don't know whether I'd have had less if she was a Tory rather than a Lib Dem. But to be fair, we loathe Lib Dems even more than the Tories most of the time.
Right.
But yeah, these are people. These are people's jobs. These are, and it's not just the MPs to be thought about. It's their staffers,
quite right,
most of whom are young, very low paid, and about to lose their jobs all of a sudden out of the blue.
And a job they dreamed of.
A job they dreamed of. And, that had all sorts of connotations for what they were going to do with their futures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just want us to remember that in the over the next 6 weeks.
But I mean, that doesn't mean I won't be absolutely crowing if the election goes the way it's looking like it will.
Of course, but that's a different thing.
But that's also human.
One, that's also human. Two, that is also the team sport element of politics. Three, that's a different thing, I think, to the individual.
Yes. And I think, you know, I mean, there are individuals who will be absolutely overjoyed if they lose their seats.
You've made that clear.
And there will be individuals more personally. There'll be individuals I'll be absolutely overjoyed if they win. Because I've been around forever and have been involved in politics for a long time, I know an awful lot of people who are running this time around.
Quite so.
You know, Parliament's going to be like a reunion of old mates for me.
And I have to say, you know, I know some, there are people who I would consider old friends who, or people I certainly know or have known that are running as well. And that does change the dynamics. Another one on the list, someone I deeply admire, is Dame Margaret Hodge. She's standing down. I think we knew that before yesterday, didn't we?
Yeah, that's been known for quite some time.
She
announced
standing.
That she wasn't. And I think there may even have been a selection in her seat. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, I saw Michael Ellis, you know, served in the cabinet, standing down. There's quite a few. Now, I suspect some of this is they want to stand down instead of spending 6 weeks campaigning and losing their seat in the Conservative ranks. Not only, and I don't want to pretend it's all self-interested, but there is obviously an element of that.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, and also there's, alongside the I don't want to spend 6 weeks doing this pointless thing, there's the, oh, well, I never lost my seat.
Indeed, it wasn't me that lost it. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's true. I have to say, on the Lib Dem ranks, there seems to be a thank goodness we can get on with it now and get this done and get stuck in.
I think that's where Labour is. Labour is champing at the bit, ready to go. You know, huge amounts of, I think the pent up campaigning energy that is just bursting forward.
I think that's right. I really do think that's right. We didn't touch on this on Monday and or Wednesday, I've lost track of the days, which is a good sign, 3 days in. We should have reflected, of course, that there are a lot of boundary changes and constituent changes, which is going to have a significant effect on what we see over the next few weeks.
Yes. I mean, I think boundary changes have some effect, but it depends how big the party differences are.
Yeah.
So, like, okay, we've gained one Tory ward, we've lost one Labour ward. That can make a big difference in a marginal election. Mm-hmm. If, on the other hand, the election result is significantly larger for one party than the other overall, it makes less difference.
Indeed. And we, all the usual caveats of how big a swing Labour need, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But yes.
Well, it's worth not quite et cetera-ing that, because there are two narratives developing. Mm-hmm. There is the Labour needs a 12-point swing just to get one victory, which is sort of, it is true, but it's both true and misleading.
Okay.
Because that is true of a national swing, but actually the Labour vote is really quite targeted, and it's targeted in areas, like if you look at the local elections, the places where Labour needs to win more are where they're doing better. So in 2017, there was a national swing to Labour, but it was not that efficient. If it had been more efficient, that national swing could have.
But by definition,
Theresa May, not just a majority, but the actual premiership.
Although by definition,
what Labour did was pile up votes in safe seats.
Sure, yes, it did. Although by definition, a national swing isn't necessarily efficient. But yes, I understand absolutely the point you're making. You need to spread it a bit as well.
Yeah. So it is worth, like, that's a narrative that, I mean, I think is handy for journalists who want to both sides things in what feels like an unbalanced election. but it's not actually one through which they are doing the principal job of journalism, which is to illuminate the situation.
I mean, the point you make is entirely valid, that it matters where the swing happens. It's why the Lib Dems are being so targeted, because they've learned that it doesn't matter if they get 5%, 10% more, if it's spread around the country.
Yeah.
They have to have that in the seats where they can live. You know, there's no point Labour, you know, weighing votes in certain parts of London, say.
Yeah.
If,
well, other than Islington North,
other than Islington North, yes, which is not a sentence we thought we'd ever say. But there's no point Labour weighing votes there if it loses by a few hundred or less, fewer, in other parts of the country.
Exactly, exactly. And, unless we end up in with electoral reform, which I don't see being a priority for a Labour government,
maybe,
I mean, technically, it's party policy because it was passed at conference, but it ain't going to be a priority. I can tell you that for nothing.
No. I heard Alistair Carmichael showing a bit of the Liberal Democrat showing a little bit of leg to Labour. The other just saying, "Oh, obviously, if there's things we go on, we should talk." I personally don't think they're going to be in a situation where Labour need to talk to the Liberal Democrats, but I'm sure. That's the only situation in which electoral reform would be a priority, because the Lib Dems would make it one.
Yeah, if there's a hung parliament, then the Lib Dems might make it. But frankly, it would still have to be done by referendum, and we saw how that went last time.
Well, quite.
I think where Labour and the Lib Dems are in a healthier place than they've been in those terms for quite some time is there are almost no seats where they are each other's main competitor.
Very good point.
And again, that just shows a much more efficient distribution of the vote, of the anti-Tory vote.
And deliberately so.
The Lib Dems are entirely targeting Tory seats, as I understand it. I think maybe they're trying to win back Sheffield Hallam or...
Probably, but basically, I know this from conversations I've had. It's all that southwest,
and the commuter belt around London,
correct,
and bits of the northwest around Manchester.
But basically, taking on
the leafy bits of the Cheshire suburbs. what they're not doing is making the mistake that Joe Swinson made and said, "I'm going to be prime minister." Like, Ed Davey is not going to say that.
Excuse me, that was in my interview, as I always like to.
There you go. Did you correct her?
Not my place as a journalist to correct her.
Did you challenge her?
I think I probably did that. Or to be fair, perhaps I was just so happy with the quote that was going to go on the front page of the House magazine that I left it. And to be fair, at that point, Ed Davey did say similar to me when I pushed him on it. But yeah, I interviewed both of them when they were competing for the leadership. Talking of party leaders, both have walked the gauntlet of the 8:10 Today programme interview. Keir Starmer was on Today, Friday. I thought he was terrible, actually. I thought it was a poor interview. I thought he was stuttering. I thought he was evasive. He's very clearly, and I don't blame them really, they're setting up it's their fault we can't do X, Y, Z kind of narrative. He went from talking about it's, and I sort of could make it make sense in my mind, but I'm not sure it goes out to the general public. It's six missions and five first steps, which...
No, it's the other way around.
There you go. Even I've forgotten it. But
there are five core missions. So basically, I mean, the problem with the missions thing as a communications person is that they're hard to communicate. The good thing is that mission-led government is a much, much better way of thinking about government than currently exists, but you've got to get through the short campaign first. That's what the five steps were essentially for, was a way of trying to bridge the gap between the missions, which are a good way of organising...
Bigger picture things.
...the government, bigger picture, and the doorstep, which... through which, like, it's very hard to sell mission-led government.
Sure.
I thought Starmer, it wasn't Starmer's best interview. I'm not as critical of it as you are. Now, I know our listeners will think that's because I'm being partisan, but I do try to be partisan in such a way that when my guys don't do well, I tell them why, because I think they could learn from it.
I'm not entirely sure it's you being partisan. I think it's just a difference of opinion. I basically thought he got in a mess over the different timeline. He was pushed very hard by Michelle Hussain on the timeline of things, what's going to happen on the...
See, I find this fascinating because what's hilarious is when the first steps came out, they were costed and the costing was up front. It's like on the don't call it a pledge card. And journalists immediately went from how are you going to pay for this, which is this question Labour's had for 18 months, to when are you going to do it?
Yeah,
like... I know that journalists have to challenge, but it just felt very kind of pivoty and like an obvious pivot rather than a smooth transition.
I want to have a little bit of a conversation with you, not today, on the general way of covering the general election. I think you and I can have a very interesting conversation about that, but I don't think that's where we are on day 2.5. I did think Starmer got a bit tetchy as well as Michelle Hussain pushed him. Which I don't think is a good sign for a very intense 6 weeks.
I think he got repetitive. Frankly, that's what's going to happen, as did Sunak, as will anybody else. They have lines to take. They're not going beyond them.
And he's particularly careful of that.
And Starmer is, you know, this is a cautious campaign. There's no denying that. We're not going to go all bells and whistles.
Please listen to the last episode to hear Emma explain about Ming vases.
Indeed. But I think there is Roy Jenkins, apparently, is where that quote comes from.
Very good. So,
but I think the thing is, there are people who listen to the Today programme. There are people who work in the bubble of politics, and then there is the general public. Mm-hmm. And these are three different groups. And frankly, all the politicians are just going to be doing their repetitive lines over and over again. And that's true of Sunak, that's true of Starmer, it's true of Davey. It's true of Richard Tice.
John Swinney.
True of John Swinney. This is a disgrace to Scotland. We're going to stand up for Scotland or whatever it is. God, he's had a mare. That's one we can talk about.
can you name? We're not going to try and remember the leaders of the Greens again.
Carla Denyer and Jonathan something. That's as far as I can get. I can always remember Carla Denyer because of Tights.
That'll do. I thought it was interesting. Obviously, Rishi Sunak had already done the day after he called the election, he'd done the 8-10. I was heading to a conference. I did get a chance to listen to this one. But I don't think it was particularly groundbreaking either, from what I can tell. I have to tell you something, Emma. I have watched back. I was at a conference for something different when he announced the election. I have watched the clip now.
Oh, my God.
It's worse than I thought.
Isn't it? Like, I only heard it the first time. It wasn't until later on that I went to look at it.
We're obviously talking about the moment he announced the election. It is truly worse than I thought. Anyway, not great. The front pages were brutal. I sent you the picture of the latest Spectator front page. A publication.
Pretty impressive how quickly they turned that around.
Very impressive. It's a publication I'm very pleased to contribute to, but it's absolutely brutal if you haven't seen it. It's a sort of washed out Rishi Sunak with the headline deluged. And that is The Spectator.
Yeah.
Ouch.
The Spectator have had a love-hate relationship with Sunak for some time. Not least because their two most senior people during the Truss Sunak leadership contest, one was in favour of Truss, the other was in favour of Sunak. Now, the one who was pro Sunak has gone into number 10.
James Forsyth,
so they are now, you know, not pro Sunak in terms of where they've stood in the past. Now, obviously, The Spectator is still a Tory supporting organ, but it is one in which the various voices of the Tories are heard. And
which
given
is something it's
that
very proud
there
of.
are an awful lot more dissenting voices within the Tories and fractious voices within the Tories, that means that that level of anti-Tory or sort of internal infighting coverage is higher.
Yeah, and the person you were referring to was James Forsyth, who, best friends with Rishi Sunak, yeah. Now works for him. Yeah, that's who you were referring to. Sticking with the media stuff, we're blazing through all of this. What a few days it's been.
I do think we should come back to the SNP.
Yeah, I think we are going to have...
I think that their campaign has started almost as poorly as Rishi Sunak's.
It has. It hasn't really filtered down south, but we've obviously got Sturgeon still being investigated for allegations around her. It's pretty messy stuff.
Well, it's not just the Sturgeon thing. I mean, A, they've had their new leader in who was supposed to sort of, you know, steady the ship for
indeed.
Less than 2 weeks, is it? It's around that. But equally, he has almost immediately made what feels like a massive misstep by backing one of his ministers who faces a suspension from Holyrood because he had an £11,000 bill that he tried to build the Scottish public purse. And he said, oh, the process was prejudiced. I was like, A, you're in charge of the Scottish Parliament. You run the processes. I mean, the processes are independent, but you set the frameworks of them. And B, oh my God, is that the message you want to start the campaign with the Scottish public? That, you know, oh, this guy who nicked 11 grand off you so his kids could watch the footy by the pool is a good guy, really. He's our guy.
Allegedly, it's a mess. Yes, you're right. Yeah, I mean, you're right.
Well, I believe that there was a finding, wasn't there? I mean, the reason I didn't say allegedly is because this suspension has been found in the Scottish Parliament.
But the whole thing, you're right to point out what a mess it's been. Absolutely. Sticking to a bit of a media war, we've had Rishi Sunak saying that he wants a debate every week with Sir Keir Starmer.
I bet he does. I bet he doesn't, but I bet he has to say it.
From what I understand, they've agreed to two, haven't they? BBC and ITV. I also reported when I was at the podcast show in London, Nick Robinson was talking about that he's one of the people that might do the leaders' interviews, which he's obviously expecting to happen.
Yeah.
Sir Keir Starmer said about this. Sunak is, quote, sounding a bit desperate. I'm inclined to agree with Sir Keir Starmer here because, frankly, it's not a good use of time.
No, it's an appalling use of time. If you are the most prominent figure in your party, i.e. the leader, you should be going from place to place to place to place to place and making your stump speech over and over and over and over again until your ears bleed, your ADs bleed. Yeah. And people start hearing it.
I think you agree with me on this. There should be some leaders' interviews.
There should be leaders' interviews. There should be some leaders' debates. But honestly, there's very little illumination that comes from those debates because they're not debates, Charlotte. I think we said this before. They're two people trotting out their pre-prepared lines in order. They never take each other up on the points that they make. They never go, oh, well, hang on, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I would like to pick up on that point you've made. Here's my extemporaneous thoughts on it. Never happens.
We don't have those West Wing moments, do we?
And I think the other reason, Rishi Sunak's not going to get what he wants, so he's going to look like a loser.
I don't think that. Well, what he's trying to do is he's trying to sort of say that Sir Keir Starmer's, quote, chickening out. And I actually think...
I think Keir Starmer's obvious riposte is, I'd rather spend time with the voters than you, mate.
Indeed. And I don't think it's a good use of anyone's time to do six debates. I think two is right. And I also think Jeremy Hunt and Rachel Reeves should do one debate.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I truly don't think we need any more. I think it's fine.
And I also would say it is fairly commonly known within politics that the people who are losing always want more debates and the people who are winning always want fewer. And it is absolutely not in Labour's interest to give more debates.
It's also a 6-week campaign. Who's going to watch 6 debates? Nobody. It's fine.
No. Also, the Euros are on. When are they going to do 6 debates?
Well, can we talk about this? Because Rishi Sunak did not have a good moment.
Oh, yes, the Welsh thing. Oh, when he went, mate. I knew that.
He went to Wales and asked a bunch of Welsh people if they were looking forward to the football, which is sort of a reasonable question, except one of them had to point out that Wales had not qualified for the Euros. They actually, and not only had they not qualified, they didn't qualify in the most heartbreaking of circumstances.
Yeah, it was really harsh.
It was pretty brutal, losing a penalty shootout, having been pretty good. It's probably not quite the question to ask. I know Rishi Sunak's excited because his team's in the Championship playoff final, the most valuable game in football, on Sunday afternoon. But
I know, Charlotte, why is it that I know which fucking football teams so many people support? Not just politicians, but like all sorts of people. And I'm like,
it's a very important facet.
It's not. I don't give a shit. It doesn't make any difference to my life or their thoughts on anything except bloody football.
It's very important.
But I happen to know that Rishi Sunak supports South Frickinhampton.
He does.
Who gives a shit?
He does. What I actually wanted to make was, not only was that a terrible screw up and a really awkward moment from Sunak, because what he could have done is, I'm so sorry, I wanted Wales to qualify too, but are you going to still watch the Euros if you wanted to chat about football? And isn't it exciting? My team's in the most valuable game in football on Sunday. You can do all of that, but he got it wrong. What I actually wanted to talk about, just for a moment, and it brings us nicely to our conversation about why and when he called the election. This summer is a really big, quite special summer of sport. And I mean that sincerely, you know, whether it's me that likes all of it or you who like gets into the Olympics, which I know you do. There's the Euros.
I'll probably watch, like, if England get through to some sort of non-qualifying round, I'll probably watch it.
Of course. So, you know, so there's the Euros, there's the Olympics, there's Wimbledon. There's all sorts of wonderful things happening this summer. And that's now sort of being shoved into with an election. I do think for some people that is a slight annoyance and a bit of a miscalculation. Now, I know for most people, the election is one day where for 20 minutes they have to pop down to the local church hall and vote. But it will obviously dominate coverage. I wonder if that was part of the weird miscalculation of doing the summer election. Am I being a bit silly? Because I'm just a big sport nerd.
I mean, I think it does restrict things and, again, gives Keir Starmer a second reason to say, no, sod off, I'm not doing a bunch of leaders' debates, I want to watch the footy.
I need 2 hours to decompress.
The one part of Keir Starmer, like, I don't care that he supports Arsenal.
Oh, I do.
Or where they sit in the league or any of those things. The only part of Keir Starmer's football stuff that I find interesting is the bit in the Tom Baldwin book on footballism and his sort of approach to football being similar to his approach to management and things. I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah, there's another interesting thing actually that I saw Laura Koonsberg point out, which is that he does a lot of events at non-league football grounds. He started the campaign at Gillingham.
I do have a soft spot for the Gills because I used to work for the Kent Messenger. So constantly reporting on, I wasn't reporting, I sell advertising space, but
it's a big part of the paper.
Surrounding my far more important adverts was news about the Gills.
But that does kind of matter. I get why he's doing it. It's part of a community. I think we're going to see a lot more of it as the election goes on. Mm. I'm going to also say something nice about Gordon Brown while we're talking about football, actually. There was a lovely clip circulating of him talking about Raith Rovers. And it is one of the least cringy politician talking about football clips ever. And it leads me to ask you, Emma Bunnell, are they going to deploy Gordon Brown during the election campaign in Scotland?
I would have thought so. The rumour was that he was quite close to thinking about standing. Now, I think that time has passed.
Surely not.
And I think he's made the right decision not to. But I think he's keen to stay and get involved. He is a really, like, when he's on fire, he's really on fire in terms of public speaking.
Well,
the speech
he
made
the
towards
Scottish
the end of the 2010 election was absolutely.
Oh, I was actually thinking of some of his Scottish interventions into the Scottish independence referendum.
Oh, also very important. And I think given the state of the SNP and the opportunity for Labour in Scotland, it would be crazy not to get one of our big Scottish beasts out and about in Scotland, you know, really, really campaigning. So, yeah, I would be really surprised if that didn't happen.
Yes, I think that's fair. The Lib Dems haven't made that much impact in the first couple of days. And all joking aside, that is slightly strange because what they get in the short campaign is a sort of legal demand that they have to have better media space. I haven't seen that much of an impact yet.
No, and I mean, the Lib Dems are doing the soft Tory, don't frighten the horses, Shire Lib Dems version of their campaign.
Indeed.
You can imagine if Leila Moran had won the leadership instead, it would be a lot more social policy focused.
That's one way of putting it.
Identity politics stuff.
That's one way of putting it.
Which would frighten, I think, the kind of target seats that they're aiming for. You know, those light blue Tory seats.
Yeah, I mean, and so Ed Davey is not scary to those people.
Ed Davey is not scary to those people. And importantly, Keir Starmer isn't scary to those people. They may not want to vote for him, but they know that by voting Lib Dem, they may get Keir Starmer as Prime Minister and they don't mind.
I think that is such an important point. And I think we're going to have to talk about that quite a lot over the next 6 weeks because I think it's really, really important.
Yeah.
Well, we've made it 3 days in. That was a lot to cover, but I'm really excited. As we said on Wednesday when the election was announced, Emma and I, at least for the next 6 weeks, are going to be doing two shows a week. One is going to be for paid subscribers. That will go out on a Tuesday. And then we're going to do our usual free slot for on a Friday for the rest of you. To the freeloaders, let's be blunt. but
what was it, Gail? Just give us your fucking money.
Emma's gone full belt Geldof already. Brilliant. But joking aside, it will make a huge difference to us if you can sign up on Patreon, not least because it means we're not talking to nobody on a Tuesday morning. We hope to bring you some really insightful insights. We're talking to a lot of different people as this goes on. We're going to try and get, I'm sure you and I will try and get to events. We're going to be in touch with lots of people. So it would really help us and if you could support us by heading over to patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast, sending us a fiver a month. You get not only those extra podcast episodes, you get both the paid versions of our newsletters, which if you buy them outright are either 50 quid a year or £5 a month as well. So you're getting a pretty good deal, if you don't mind me saying.
Absolutely.
Makes a huge difference to us. We're going to go bigger in this election. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you on Tuesday.